From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
This is Chris Fetters of Dogman.com here in Seattle, and I'm catching up once again with Kim Grinnell, who is down in New Orleans handling the duties down in the Big Easy for Dogman.com. Day four for Kim. It's really kind of day two as far as the big media is concerned in terms of, you know, getting a chance to talk to the Texas players and coaches, the Washington players and coaches. This is their kind of their second full day of being in New Orleans, getting ready for the Sugar Bowl, which will take place Monday night, New Year's Day. And Kim, you know, again, they kind of flipped the script a little bit yesterday, which would have been Thursday. They had Washington's offense with Texas's defense. This morning, they had Texas's offense go first with their offensive coordinator, Kyle Flood, some of their key players, guys like quarterback Quinn Ewers, receiver Xavier Worthy. And then they flipped it and they got Washington's defensive guys, the defensive coordinators, as well as some of the key defensive players, whether you're talking about Braylon Trice, Edifuan Ulufosio, Jabbar Muhammad, Dom Hampton, guys like that. So give us a sense, give us a flavor of kind of how things went like today, because it sounds like it was a little different than it was yesterday.
Yeah, you know, first of all, we're starting to get more and more and more media coming in. You know, Chris Egan is here. Softy's coming in this afternoon. Mike Varell, Christian Capel have made it in. So a lot of the Seattle media is starting to come on in, and you're starting to see a lot more media down here. And it's still kind of funny because it's still, you know, probably 2-1 Texas media for compared to Washington media. And I don't think a lot of that has to do with the proximity. You know, when we have Texas going on first in the morning, there seems to be a lot more people interested than Texas, which actually is a little bit better for us. We get a little bit more opportunity to ask questions. And, you know, I think I talked about this yesterday, what makes things kind of unique. Maybe we're just a little bit spoiled, but for those who don't know, our schedule with the coaches and players on Monday, we always get Coach DeBoer, and then we get Ryan Grubb every Monday, and we get one of the two defensive coordinators every Monday. So we get three coaches on Monday, and then on Tuesdays, we have a player availability, and the only ones that are off limits are those who haven't played, the freshmen and injured players. And then on Wednesday, again, we get all the coaches who aren't the coordinators, so we can have Scott Huff, we can get Jamarcus Shepherd, and that's our schedule for the week. Texas, they get the two coordinators in the preseason. They don't get them during the regular season at all. They don't get any coaches at all during the season. The only time they get players is they maybe get three or four players for 3 or 4 minutes at a time post game, but players aren't available. So these beat writers down here are like, you know, they're like hunting dogs, man. I mean, they're into this because it's the only time they're going to get. And the schedule tomorrow, and Chris, you went through this when we were down at the Peach Bowl. We go to the stadium and they have tables set up with every player there. And it sounds like the teams are contractually obligated to make every player available. So, you know, I'll be making sure that tomorrow I get a hold of Zach Durfee, Curly Reed, who's from down here. I want to talk to, but the Texas people, they get to talk to players. And what do you think is going to be like with Malik Murphy leaving? What do you think that is going to be like around Arch Manning tomorrow in the Superdome?
Well, Malik Murphy's not there, so you don't have to worry about Malik Murphy.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Malik Murphy's already gone to Duke. So
with him leaving, that puts so much more attention on Arch Manning. So give me an idea what you think that gaggle around Arch Manning is going to look like tomorrow.
Oh, it'll be a clown show. No, it'll be an absolute circus. But that sounds like it's kind of what they've set it up to be, because, you know, if they don't allow players to talk to anybody and you don't allow the coaches to talk to anybody, you know, the media is going to take their opportunity when they can. I mean, that's the only thing you can allow the media to do. It's like hurry up and wait. You know, we've done it for years.
If you recall in Arch Manning's recruitment, he didn't do interviews. He did a couple and that was it.
Yeah. So, and just your audio cut out just a little bit on the third guy that you were kind of prioritizing to talk to on Saturday morning, Austin Mack, the quarterback. But yeah, obviously there's going to be a ton of other guys there. Apparently it sounds like everybody who's down there is open and available. So that should be really, really interesting to see how that works out. Cause I do remember how that was for the Peach Bowl back in 2016. And essentially to set the scene for that, as you remember, Kim, they were in the Mercedes-Benz, the super, whatever the dome is in Atlanta where the Falcons play, is where the Peach Bowl was. They opened up that the entire field, and they basically just had places available where guys were going to be talking. And they literally opened up the whole field, and they had a segment of time that was going to be open for Alabama players and coaches. And then they had a certain segment of time that was going to be available for Washington players and coaches. And when it happens, it's an absolute free for all. And it doesn't matter, going back to the idea of Texas, the media not having a chance to talk to any of these guys. Well, even though we've talked to a bunch of guys throughout the season, it's still a free for all, because we may have really focused our efforts on probably 30 guys for the entire season. Well, now we get the chance, if we want to talk to the other 75 or 80. And so that usually turns into a total circus.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Texas media is going to gravitate towards Jerome Wodunzi and Michael Penix, but we've talked to them so many times this year, no need to get them. But it's the guys we haven't had a chance to talk to, the Devin Bryant, Zach Durfee,
Rogers, we were talking a little bit about earlier.
Yeah, I've already told everybody's been requesting Zach Durfee, so we'll get a chance tomorrow to see if he's real, so that'll be interesting.
Well, let's put it this way. I've been listening to a couple of the national media guys, especially the ones that are going to be either already in New Orleans or are going to be covering the game in New Orleans on Monday, and they're even mentioning Zach Durfee, like, in their game previews. Like, this guy might actually matter, and it's he's become Chuck Norris.
Oh, yeah. Chip Brown said, tell me about Zach Durfee. I said, he hasn't ever played. They go, well, that sounds like they're concerned about Zach Durfee. And it's just kind of like the legend continues to grow.
Well, I joked on the message boards, and hopefully people took my comment sarcastically, is that, you know, if people are asking what his first play might be if he gets a chance to play in the game. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's already taken over the kickoff return job from Daniel Nada. So he's going to end up with a kick six, right? That's just how this thing works, right? This is the legend of Zach Durfee growing and growing.
Oh, he's going to kick off if Washington defers. He's going to kick off and make the tackle, recover the fumble for, scoop and score.
Yeah, exactly. it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. So, obviously setting the scene for Saturday, but let's go back to what you saw this morning. Kim, again, Texas's offense, starting with offensive coordinator Kyle Flood, yeah, you know, Kyle Quinn Ewers, Xavier Worthy, which obviously everyone's really curious to see if Xavier Worthy is going to be 100%. Was he walking around with a limp at all? Did you see him walking around? Did you get a chance to get a feel for what that was like with the Texas guys?
Yes. I talked to him. I talked to him on the way out. I kind of asked him about the comparison to John Ross. I asked him who was faster. He wasn't going to answer that, but he was a little bit bigger than I anticipated. Nice kid, kind of quiet, was joking with his teammates, but he sure looked like 100%, because he was a guy last year that, you know, just put the fear of God into everybody he played against. And I'm sure he will tomorrow, and they'll game plan for him. But yeah, Zach, you know, Xavier, he just looks ready to go.
Yeah, and of course he put the fear of God into everyone in the Alamo Bowl until he tried to catch a ball, and then he couldn't catch a ball. Yeah. So if he does more of that, that'll be interesting, because clearly the Texas offense, passing offense, has really relied on him and A.D. Mitchell and Whittington and Jatavion Sanders, who – you probably saw Jatavion Sanders this morning. Yeah. He really reminds me physically of like Austin Seferian Jenkins, just a load, but a guy who can really run.
Not as big, but real bright, well-spoken kid, you know, had a lot of good things to say about Coach Sark and the culture that he's created. So he's a guy, and it was pretty, I don't know if it's pretty obvious, but it sure seemed like it to me that yesterday, after Trevante Sweat talked a little bit of smack, it sounds like they may have had a talk with some of these people and just said, hey, you know, let's cool it, because these guys didn't say a lot, especially Quinn Ewers. I mean, that was just the creatively saying nothing word salad minus the lettuce. I mean, he said absolutely nothing. And he was pretty quiet. And he's just, yeah, nothing. Just nothing at all from Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, and unsurprising, right? I mean, at this point, I mean, the quarterbacks, I mean, I know that the Texas fans and Texas media are making a lot of the fact that, you know, Michael Penix Jr. said he didn't remember anything about the Alamo Bowl except winning, you know, as if that's somehow smack. I mean, it's like, okay. I mean, did you want him to talk about specifics of Washington winning the game? I mean, is that, I mean, I don't know what you want to do, but either way, it was interesting. I guess we talked just a little bit off air before we recorded this, that apparently the Christian Jones, the offensive lineman, started to maybe delve into that a little bit and then quickly caught himself.
Yeah. He started down the road, and it was kind of funny because his demeanor changed and he got kind of, he started talking a little bit of smack, and then he backed right off and he goes, yeah. Kind of like what Coach Pete used to do. Remember that? He'd start talking and he'd stop and go, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, not a lot of guys at that age necessarily have that self-editing mechanism. So good on him for being able to kind of remind himself that, oh yeah, probably not supposed to say anything.
Yeah.
Outside of the word salads and everything else, was there anything, even Kyle Flood, the offensive, which is interesting because he's the offensive coordinator, but he's also their offensive line coach, which I find to be kind of an interesting combination. Did he say anything of note?
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting because somebody asked him about the Washington defense, and he said it's a different defense that they faced all year, and then it's more of a pro-style defense. So that kind of, you know, raised and perked up some ears. So that was an interesting comment. And, you know, again, you know, these guys just weren't saying a whole lot. If you take a listen to, you know, the Washington players talk, and then you take a look at the Texas players talk, I think the Washington players exhibited much, much, much more of their personalities than the Texas players. So I don't know. You know, it's just, hey, they're Texas, I guess. So not that they were bad. I mean, but it to me, it seemed pretty obvious that they were trained to creatively say nothing.
Okay, fair enough.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
CBS Friday, TV's hottest show is Fire Country.
I'm not a hero. I'm in orange for a reason.
They're taking 12 months off your sentence. You're free.
Lady.
With a special epic season finale.
Now that I'm out, I need something to get me up in the morning.
You are a firefighter.
Used to be.
That will be unforgettable.
In the name of your life's happiness, go get your girl.
She's getting married tomorrow.
Says, when do you let anything get in the way of what you want?
The Fire Country season finale, Friday, 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Now let's move over to the other side, the side that we're a little bit more familiar with, obviously, the Washington defensive coordinators, guys like Alfonso Tupatala, Ulofosio, Trice, Muhammad, Dom Hampton. Some of these guys you got a chance to talk to. Anything out of the ordinary from them, or do you feel like they were maybe given some talking points and some things based on maybe how the media thing went yesterday?
No, I mean, they're the same as they have been all year with us. Michael yesterday was probably more upbeat than we're used to seeing him and a little bit more open. Today, Eddie, I thought it was interesting. I asked him about, you know, when a year ago, you know, he had football taken away from him. And also Michael had been through that where it had been taken away from him, and asked him about him talking with Michael and just ask him if that made this thing a little bit more special since it'd been taken away for him. And he said that, you know, he was really unsure of himself, and he knew about Michael's injuries, and he's looking at his scars. And last spring camp, he was just looking at the way Michael Michael was moving in that first spring camp he was at. And he said it just gave him a lot more confidence that he could come back because it was his first injury and Michael had been through it twice. And he said, yeah, and I asked Michael about it all the time, probably to the point of bugging him too much. So that was kind of interesting talking about that. And then they talked a lot. I was asking them about, you know, the games that they were behind during the year, you know, in that Stanford game, the Arizona State game, the Washington State game, and just being behind a little bit, the Oregon game, and, you know, what their mindset was. Were they a little nervous, or did the "we're built for this" kind of sink in? And they just said that, honestly, you know, they said, "We're just not talking it. We honestly believe we're going to win every game. And we honestly believe we're going to win that, you know, the Arizona State game too." So it was interesting hearing them talk about that. And it's not in a braggadocio way. They're just really confident in their ability. And this is an older team. What was it? 9 guys that are 6-year players. And they've got a lot of 4th- and 5th-year guys. This is a very, very mature team that's been through a lot and been through a lot of games. And those guys that have been here for 6 years, they're on their 3rd coach. And I saw something, you know, online yesterday about, you know, when you're doing hard things, it makes hard things easy. And these guys have been through a lot of hard stuff. So the hard stuff for them just seems to come easier than it does to most.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, obviously, they've been through it too, right? You know, I mean, it feels like those kinds of games not only harden you for the tougher times, but it also gives you a reference point on how to deal with things when they might get away from you, when they might all of a sudden get a little bigger than the moment should allow for. And so there's certainly a lot to be said for that. So, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of whether or not the moment gets too big for them on Monday at the Sugar Bowl, because it just doesn't feel like this team is somehow going to be awed or swayed by that moment, even as big as it is.
They seem to be flying under the radar because the other 3 programs are the ones that are getting all the attention. When you talk down here, it's just Texas is getting most of the attention. And then even I think that Alabama and Michigan are getting more attention than Washington. And I asked, you know, 13-0, number 2 ranked in the country, yet you're underdogs. How does that sit with you? And they just said, we're used to it. And, you know, I asked Braylon, you know, why is that? And he goes, I really have no idea. Well, I'll tell you why they're underdogs is because a lot of the national pundits and the odds makers, you know, they're not looking at Washington. They're not seeing Washington. They're on the East Coast, and they're just not seeing a lot of Washington football. But they're going to on Monday.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. Also, what I found unique about this particular setup today, Kim, is that, and you'll have to remind me, because I don't remember if this was the way it was maybe for the Alamo Bowl, but this was a rare time where we got a chance to listen to both William Inge and Chuck Morrell at the same time. And you really, like you said, when you laid out our initial weekly media schedule for game weeks, we usually either get William Inge or Chuck Morrell. We get one or the other. They usually go back and forth from week to week. Today, you got a chance to talk to both of them. Was there anything interesting or unusual about seeing them both up there at the same time?
Yeah, Chuck Morrell walks in his sweats and his cutoff hoodie, you know, with the arm sleeves showing. And, you know, he's got his beard. And, you know, William Inge comes in looking like the college professor. And, you know, William Inge is a guy who he enjoys talking. Chuck Morrell sitting up there on that stage, you could just tell the minute he sat down, he was just looking for the exits to get out of there. So, no, I mean, it's just kind of funny. Those guys are co-defensive coordinators and they're so different. And they were talking about Chuck Morrell was talking about just, you know, back at Sioux Falls with the coaches and just how much of an influence those early coaches when he played actually had, because he was, you know, I'm sure some people realize, but Chuck Morrell and Kalen DeBoer were teammates back at Sioux Falls. And they mentioned their coach back there, Bob Young, and still how that guy still has such an impact on them today, because when they played, Bob Young was 98% about culture and 2% football, and that still rings true today with what they're saying. So, you know, when you get Coach Morrell talking about stuff like that, he opens up. But, you know, Chuck is kind of like Pete Kwiatkowski. He'll talk to you, but it's not his favorite thing to do.
Yeah, and generally speaking, between the two of them, to give fans kind of a flavor of kind of what it's like to talk to these guys on a weekly basis, when you talk to William Inge, He may seem to be a little bit more buttoned up or have kind of the canned responses, but he has pretty clever ways of being able to kind of say things in coach speak where it's like, oh, that's interesting. Like when he mentioned the goons thing, like, you know, you got to have 11 goons going after the ball. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. I haven't heard a defensive guy talk about players being like goons. But so that kind of struck me as odd right off the bat. One of the first times we got a chance to talk to him, but generally he's pretty good about being buttoned up. Whereas Morrell, I think he's got a little bit looser filter, if you know what I mean. Like he's more inclined to maybe say things. And then, like you said, he might catch himself, or, you know, he doesn't feel like he's 100% like comfortable being in that situation. But if you get him in a situation where he's really kind of open and talkative, he can really say some cool things.
No, he's great. You know, so, you know, of everybody on the entire staff, I would say Chuck's probably the most buttoned up, and talking to the media, he's probably the one that enjoys it the least. But yeah, I mean, they're both fine today. And, you know, what I think is kind of cool is we know these guys because we've been around them so much. But I think the national media is getting an appreciation for what these guys really are, you know, with, you know, Grubb coming in, you know, with his beard and his baseball hat pulled down, and the Washington coach is just coming in, and the Texas coach is being a little bit more buttoned up. So they're kind of seeing that blue collar work ethic attitude from the Washington coaches.
Yeah. I think the other thing too, to kind of go along with that, Kim, is that, you know, I think that the national guys that don't necessarily see Washington as much, or just haven't been connected with Washington as much, if they're more East Coast or South or what have you, you know, they'll see the occasional article from Bruce Feldman in the Athletic, or like a, you know, Kirk Herbstreit talking about the culture and, you know, their experience during the game day thing during the Oregon game, for instance. And so they'll get a general sense of, oh, it sounds like the culture is really strong. It sounds like the buy-in's been really strong. It feels like that's been probably a real key component for them going unbeaten in 2023. So I think when you go to what you were talking about, and these media finally getting a chance to have first person interactions with these players and coaches, now all of a sudden it really dawns on them, you know what? This is legit. This is like, they're exactly who we would have expected them to be based on what we've been reading, what we've been hearing. You know what I mean? It just feels like, yeah, everything that people have been talking about, it's not artificial. It's genuine. It's exact. Yeah. These guys are exactly who we thought they would be.
Yeah, the other thing that was kind of interesting, and both Braylon Trice and Dominic Campton talked about it, it was, you know, with the coaching change, with, you know, they started with Coach Pete and, you know, Jimmy Lake and then Kalen DeBoer. Guys were asking them how close they got to getting in the transfer portal. You know, and Braylon Trice said, yeah, I was looking at it. Dominic Campton said, yeah, I was looking at it. Excuse me. But, you know, Dominic was saying his parents told him to stick it out, and Braylon Trice was saying the same thing. And when Michael Penix was talking about when he came on his recruiting visit, you know, he spent some time looking at, you know, he knew the offense, but then he saw that the weapons he was going to have, and he got really excited and go, yeah, I can win with these guys. So, you know, the culture thing, we're built for this whole thing, seems to be the mantra. And like you said, you know, we've heard so many slogans over the years, Fetters. We've heard it so often, but this team with this, you know, we're built for this. This seems to, and this is about us and the one and all mentality, probably rings more true than any other team I've covered.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there's something, it's not, I wouldn't say it's unique, because it's, what I would say though, is that I would say that there has probably been more carryover to what's happened on the field in terms of the connection between culture and results. Culture and the end result, compared to even with Coach Pete, or, you know, going went back earlier with Sark and all the other coaches before that. So yeah, I think there's certainly something to that for sure. But it really goes to the idea that these guys have really, you know, embraced it, bought fully into it when Coach DeBoer and his staff first came in. It's funny because what I'm seeing right now with like Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, and I know this is going to sound like an odd comparison or segue, but I'm seeing a lot of guys from Michigan State that went into the portal that are now withdrawing, that are now going to stay at Michigan State. And that reminds me so much of kind of that initial push right after Jimmy Lake was let go and Kalen DeBoer was hired. And these players at that time, back in 2019, 2020, were in limbo. They didn't know if they should stay or go. You mentioned Trice and Hampton. There's tons more examples of that, right? And by talking to Coach DeBoer, by talking to the assistant coaches that they would be working with, you clearly got a sense by all those players returning that they bought in, like they understood what the potential was, what it could be. And I think we're seeing a lot of the same types of things with Jonathan Smith at Michigan State right now. And I think that's part of the reason why it may not happen for the next year or two, but I think down the road, you'll see maybe some similar type success with Jonathan Smith at Michigan State.
Yeah, it's unique special times right now, you know, and if you're not appreciating this, you know, not paying attention, we may never see anything like this again. So it just makes it pretty special, being down here. You know, and we've been doing this since 1997. So we've been through the highs and lows and we've been through a lot. So, you know, I'm not taking this for granted at all.
Before we move on, Kim, any unique quotes, anything that really caught you off guard talking to the players?
Yeah. Dominic Hampton said he held a baby alligator and gave it right back. Which was kind of funny.
I think I saw Roma Dunze was talking about that too on one of the social networks. I think I saw that he, because I saw the baby alligator, but I also saw that it either had like a rubber band around its mouth or something so it couldn't open its jaw, right? And so it looked unique for sure.
Yeah, if they're handing me a baby alligator, I'm turning around going, nope.
Yeah. Nope. Okay. Makes sense.
Not doing that. So, nothing really. I mean, just, they're just regularly good guys like we talked to. So it's all interesting. A lot, you know, just seeding kind of a lot to the national guys and, you know, cause they need to, I mean, this is the first time they've ever been around the Washington guys. So it's all good.
Yep, for sure. All right. So we are going to move on real quick. We don't have a ton of recruiting news we need to talk about, but we do have one big piece of information we absolutely need to talk about. And that's something that happened first thing this morning, Friday morning.
Earliest woof ever?
Maybe. I think I saw a woof roughly, what, about 7 o'clock Pacific time? So it might have been about 9 o'clock your time.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I saw it and I was like, I kind of had to like, you know, kind of rub the sleep out of my eyes a little bit and go, is this for real? Did I miss something from yesterday? But yeah, it was real.
Yeah. And we had that one pre-written.
credit to Scott Eklund for being right on top of that one. He knew that this was likely coming down the pike. And the player that we're talking about is former California wideout Jeremiah Hunter, who announced early this morning that he is going to transfer to Washington for his final season. Now, he's got 2 years because he does have a redshirt year available if he needs it, but he's got 2 years to use 1 year of eligibility. So he's likely at this point, I guess you could call him a 1 year rental. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So 6'2", 200 pounds, 60 some catches for 700 some yards. And you just got to, you know, you mentioned it, Chris. Those are good numbers for an anemic offense like Cal runs.
Yeah. And because, you know, Coach Wilcox is in that staff, we know a bunch of people down there because there's been connections between Washington and Cal with those coaches and that staff for a long time. And the reviews we're getting in terms of the initial response of a guy like Jeremiah Hunter going to Washington and what they know about the offense sounds pretty positive so far.
Yeah. What I was told, you know, from somebody who's really close to the Cal program was he's not going to blow you away with his speed. Fundamentally, he's strong. He's got strong hands, and it's a really good pickup for Washington. And then he dropped a couple of expletives and said, we're a damn AAA farm team for everybody else to come raid. So, but yeah, so feel bad for Cal, but that's a pretty good pickup for Washington. And we always say, Chris, when something happens, and you hear me say this all the time, the first words out of my mouth is, what does it mean? What does bringing in a receiver for 1 year mean, Chris? What do you think it means?
Well, it's interesting because they do have a bunch of guys coming through the pike. They have a couple true freshman guys that are going to be there in 2024 signees. In Jason Robinson and Williams from Oaks Christian, so they're going to have those guys, Justice Williams, and so they've got guys coming through the pike, and they're Jamarcus Shepard's going to develop those guys as they go. They've got the two guys left from the class last year, and Rasheed Williams and Keith Reynolds. So they've got four basically freshmen, redshirt freshmen coming through the pike already. You know, they've got seven guys that are incoming transfers, although only four of them have signed so far, because you've got quarterback Will Rogers from Mississippi State, linebacker Ethan Barr from Vanderbilt. You've got Drew Azzopardi, the offensive tackle from San Diego State, and Sebastian Valdez, the defensive lineman from Montana State. They still need to get B.J. Green, the edge player from Arizona State. They need to get Trey Watson, the tight end from Fresno State, and now Jeremiah Hunter from Cal. They need to get those guys signed and delivered with their scholarship papers before winter quarter starts at Washington, which will be on January 3rd, just 48 hours after the end of the Sugar Bowl. So things are going to be moving very, very quickly, Kim, in terms of what this all means. But yeah. Does it mean, is it basically just a straight swap for Rome Odunze? Because that's kind of what it feels like right now.
Or Jalen McMillan?
Well, but that's the thing. Is it, are they just going to, because what I'm looking at is, if you look at Jeremiah Hunter taking Rome's spot, and then you've got the two incoming guys, and obviously one of them, you've got Tayshaun Lyons, who's in the portal now, the true freshman receiver. So right now, how many guys are actually in that room? So,
well, I think your main guys are going to be Hunter, McMillan, or Polk. I think one of them will wind up coming back, and then Jeremy Bernard. And I wouldn't be surprised if another guy comes into the room too.
Right. Cause you, in theory, you'd have Giles Jackson.
Right.
You could have Jalen Polk. You got Rasheed Williams. You got Jeremy Bernard. You could have conceivably Jalen McMillan. You've got Denzel Boston.
Yeah.
Right. And then you've got any of the, you know, basically everyone else. You got Keith Reynolds. So that's seven. And then you've got the two freshmen. So that's nine. And then Hunter makes 10. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's assuming that both Polk and McMillan return. At this point, would you characterize, what do you think, would the odds be greater that McMillan returns or Polk returns?
McMillan.
See, and I'm thinking McMillan too.
Yeah. Yeah. So he might have slipped out of the first round and possibly down to the third or fourth round.
See, and I'm, you know, as good as a championship game as he had against Oregon, Kim, and we've talked to him, and he said basically these next games, including the championship game, we're going to kind of determine his mindset on how he was going to attack this decision eventually, because they have until, and this is all the guys who want to declare, whether it's Rome, Trice, Troy Fautanu, any of these guys, and any of the other guys who have big decisions, whether we're talking about Roger Rosengarten, whether we're talking about Jabbar Muhammad, some of these other guys, you know, Dylan Johnson, you know, they're going to have until January 15th to officially submit their paperwork for the waiver to be included in the draft. If you have not included your paperwork or submitted it by the 15th, you can't do it. You're done. So, you know, we'll see what happens, because there's just 2 weeks from the Sugar Bowl, literally 2 weeks until they have to declare. And I know that makes it seem like, well, they only have a short amount of time to decide. They've been thinking about this for a while. Don't get it twisted. I mean, these guys have been really thinking about this in the back of their minds for quite a bit. And obviously Jalen McMillan, when he got hurt, that really put a wrench in the works, because I think he's seen so many of the guys that came back, whether it's Fautanu, whether it's Trice, whether it's some of these other guys like Penix, who are seeing the results of those guys coming back and really finishing their careers how they wanted to, on a real high note. And I wonder how much of that is going to really tug at Jalen McMillan as we kind of finish things up here.
I think it's going to be real interesting, because from what I understand, the grades came back mid-December. So I think that they've had their grades from the NFL for a little bit. So I think they'll have a pretty good idea. And again, if Jalen McMillan blows up in the game on Monday, that could spur some things. If he has 150 yards and a couple of long runs and everybody sees that he's healthy, he's going to be right back in there.
Yeah, the other thing I think that was interesting to think about in terms of what this decision by Jeremiah Hunter means in the grand scheme, Kalen DeBoer on the signing day press conference back, what was it, 2 weeks ago or a week ago, he mentioned that he thought there could be up to maybe five guys that could maybe be a part of this class above and beyond who signed and who was announced on that particular day, on signing day. Obviously, Hunter and Trey Watson could be considered part of that five group. Do you think they're done if they only go after maybe three other players?
I think they got one or two, but that's probably about it, unless we get some more attrition than we anticipated. But we'll have to update the numbers, but have some attrition from Washington in order to fit who they have.
Right, and we will update the numbers right after the Sugar Bowl, to be sure. But that is the key component, right? Whatever number they're at now, like let's say they're at 85, for instance, and I'm not saying that 100% for sure, but they're obviously right around that number. Whoever they want to add, they're going to have to subtract on the other end. So if they want to add two more players, that means they would have to have two more players leave via attrition in terms of players that would transfer. And I think we will see not only players making decisions in terms of whether they're going to stay, whether they're going to declare for the NFL, but also if they're going to declare whether or not they want to go into the portal. And even if they do go in the portal, as we've seen before in the past, it doesn't necessarily mean that you got to stay there. Doesn't necessarily mean you're done. You could go out, test the waters, and then depending on how your relationship ended with the coaches when you went in the portal, they may welcome you back with open arms. So you just never know how those things work.
Yeah. No, I expect a lot of those decisions to be made next week. So I'll try to get some answers out of the guys. I'll ask Rome. I'll ask Jalen. I'll ask, you know, the two Jalens if they're going to come back. And, you know, it's Roger Rosengarten and some of the other guys too, Troy Fautanu, who I expect to go. But I'll see what I can get out of it.
It does feel like there's probably three guys with eligibility remaining that just seem like absolute slam dunks, and that would be Troy Fautanu, Rome Odunze, and Braylon Trice, right? I mean, it feels like those are the three guys that it feels like they're done no matter what.
Well, Scott Huff flat out said, I asked about, you know, him recruiting Troy Fautanu, and he flat out said, he's ready to go, Kim. He's ready to go. So yeah. Troy's not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, he won the Morris trophy for the best offensive lineman in the Pac-12, voted on by his peers. It usually doesn't get any bigger than that if you're a Pac-12 offensive lineman. I mean, that's like his Heisman trophy. So,
hey, did you notice what Rome Odunze said about his NIL deal? Did you remember what he said? I thought it was kind of funny.
I did not.
He said they asked him if he bought anything. He goes, I'm cheap. He goes, I haven't spent a dime. He goes, I don't buy no chain, no car, no nothing. He goes, I invested it. So
yeah, well, and that is kind of funny too, because really, depending on how these guys were raised or the environment or anything else, you know, like a lot of these guys, they'll do their NIL stuff and they'll either donate a chunk of it to charity or they'll give it a lot to their families because maybe their family needs it more than they do at that time. So it really, really totally depends. But knowing Rome and knowing his situation, you know, that doesn't surprise me whatsoever. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Dom Hampton said he bought something nice for his bratty little sister. So that was funny.
There you go. See, well, again, family, you know, I'm sure he's got probably got younger brothers and sisters that are pestering them saying they've got money now. So why aren't you spending it? And, you know, yada, yada, yada. So,
all right. I need your assistance, Federice. I need some advice. I don't come for advice. I need some advice, right?
Yep. Okay.
So I'm scheduled to leave here on Tuesday at 3:00 to head back to Seattle. And then I've got a flight out again to Houston. I mean, for the national championship game. So I get back Tuesday and I've got a flight out actually to Austin at 6:00 in the morning on Thursday. So I'd only be home for a day, maybe. I've got a 6:00 flight in the morning, so it's really early into Austin. And then it's a 2-hour drive down to Houston. But then I've got coming back the next day's not an issue, but it's I think I got a 3:00 flight out of Austin after the national championship game. So Softy and Cam Cleland are doing the same thing to Austin and driving back to Austin. And then so a lot of the guys down here, they're talking about if Washington wins, they're just going to drive to Houston. So I'm trying to figure out what I want to do when they win this game. What would you do?
It makes sense to me. I'd stay down there. I wouldn't fly all the way back up to Seattle just to fly back the next day or within 48 hours.
So maybe
I'd stay down there.
Maybe jump in a car with one of the guys, Dean Rutz from the Times or Dan Rayleigh, maybe jump down there. But then I'm going to have to, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get a flight back out of Houston back up to Seattle. So I'll have to check on that or maybe get a ride up to Austin somehow.
Well, you know, it's never too old for a good road trip, Kim. That's my advice. Never too old for a good road trip. Now, if it's precluded to the fact that you would have to drive from Houston all the way back to Seattle, that might be stretching it. But if you can get back to Houston or if you can fly out of Houston or even have to go up to Austin to fly out or hell, even Dallas-Fort Worth, if you have to go to the Metroplex, you can get flights out of there, too. So there's got to be some options.
I'll figure it out. So anyways.
Yeah my God. Exactly. Anything else we need to wrap things up before we put a bow on this particular podcast for Friday?
No, I'll probably head over to Bourbon Street and grab some dinner and maybe catch up with Softy tomorrow night. We have a media party on one of the balconies on Bourbon Street, so that ought to be interesting. And then New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, we have both head coaches. So we'll have DeBoer and Sark on New Year's Eve. And then Monday's going to be busy. Monday's going to be really busy. So we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I saw that today they had a second line parade at Pat O'Brien's. You didn't get a chance to go check that out, did you? You didn't grab a hurricane or anything like that?
No, I'm not going to drink a hurricane. Hurricanes are for stupid people. I'm not stupid.
All right.
Yeah,
I could have sworn I saw you have a hurricane back in 2011 when we went down for the LSU game, but maybe I was just seeing things.
No, because I think it's just vodka and sugar water that's dyed, you know. So, yeah, and it's bad vodka to begin with. So, no.
Then they have those slushy things and those really huge, like thin containers, like you just. Yeah, those things are evil.
Yeah, I'll just grab a pale ale, a lager, a pilsner, or a glass of red wine and call it good. I'm not going to do any of that nonsense. So.
Okay. All right. Hey, you've heard it first. Kim is going to avoid all sugary alcoholic beverages while down in New Orleans. And on that note, we are going to end it here for Friday. We will obviously be back to you tomorrow when there are going to be a lot of things to talk about. I can guarantee you because Kim's going to get the – he's going to get the total scoop on Zach Durfee, a.k.a. Chuck Norris, as well as guys like Austin Mack and Curly Reed and getting back to Louisiana for him and all the other guys that we have not gotten a chance to talk to so far this year. So
fun day tomorrow.
Go ahead.
It'll be fun day tomorrow.
Yes, it will be. So for Kim Grinnell's down in New Orleans at the Sugar Bowl, this is Chris Fetters for Dogman.com. Go Dogs.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.